This is a podcast from Minute Media.
To Riverdale After Dark, a podcast about the CW's Riverdale that's got long tails and ears for hats. I'm Alex.
When you're walking in the darkness, sometimes you hear a little tune. And what do you do? Follow the tune? Yes, I'm Justin.
And we are going to be talking about Season 5, Episode 15, Chapter 91, Return of the Pussycats, the highly, highly anticipated episode that finally brings the Pussycats back together. But not only that, brings a number of the person of color cast members to the forefront, gives them center stage, something that was part of a huge discussion that went on over two summers ago. Time has lost all meaning, but it was a while ago.
True.
Yeah. But there was, just before we get into even any recap or anything or thoughts about the episode, of course, I assume most people probably know this, but there was a lot of back and forth, not just in the world, but very specifically in the Riverdale community as well. I believe, if I remember correctly, it started with somebody coming after Ashley Murray on Twitter, Vanessa Morgan coming to her defense, that person deleting their tweet, and then that snowballed into a discussion about Vanessa Morgan's treatment on the show, other women of color and people of color's treatment on the show, with the very quick response from showrunner Roberto Aguirre-Sacasa saying back, yes, we know, we're going to do better, we were wrong, we apologize, we were already talking to Vanessa about it. And that has already shown up in certain ways, with the time jump in particular. We got a big bump up in terms of what's going on with Toni Topaz and her role on the show. We also had the addition of Erin Westbrook as Tabitha Tate on the show. So these are all good things, but this episode is a very big, very important course correction, because before Toni and before Tabitha, there was Josie and the Pussycats, and I think everybody, including the people who work on Riverdale, would say they weren't treated right. they just weren't. You know, we talked about this a lot on the podcast, how Josie, great, the Pussycats, great, never a part of the plot.
Yeah.
Like, not at all, right?
Well, and it feels like the show is sort of built around, like, and then we'll have Josie and the Pussycats do a musical number, because it felt like that was sort of the role. And then the fans were like, we want, what's up with them? We want to hear about them. They seem fun. And it was like, oh, well, that's not what we sort of had planned. And then I think they tried a couple of things and it just was hard to reconcile both. And here in this episode, we get sort of what could have been from the jump, where they are truly front and center. It's like a whole different take on the town of Riverdale, really.
So we've gone over a little bit of the recap that you need to know already, but the big things you do need to know is Josie McCoy left Riverdale, the town, and the show at the end of season 3. She briefly came back at the beginning of season 4 for the tribute to Fred Andrews and Luke Perry episode. But otherwise, she was off on Katie Keene, which took place approximately 5 years-ish.
Yeah.
Very-ish. After high school graduation, or after she left at least, while the time jump is 7-ish years later. And at this point, when we pick up with her here, she is now a musical superstar. In her time in New York, she was working towards that, but never quite got there. There was a different iteration of the Pussycats that she worked with.
She had a big 2 years in that sort of gap. I love that there was a reference, I think, to the wonky time in the episode. Someone was like, it's been 7 years. And I think Josie was like, yeah, something like that. It's like very coolly being like, let's not talk about that right now.
No, don't break down the math, please. No, nobody with the timeline.
Yeah.
But The other thing that happened to her in New York that's semi-important to mention, but doesn't actually play into the episode very heavily, is she clashed pretty heavily with a character named Alexander Cabot, a.k.a. Xandra Cabot, who is the heir to the Cabot fortune. They both tried to be musical superstars at the same time. Xandra ripped off a bunch of her songs, as well as the look of the Pussycats, for her own band. Again, doesn't really come up that much here, but just so you know who that character is, I guess.
It doesn't come up, and it's very odd that they brought Xandra into this episode as well, because it was like, oh, Xandra and Josie, of course, they're going to have a whole thing. It's like, oh, no, they're not. They're just coincidentally floating along the same parallel
And in
timeline.
Fact, to the point that towards the end of the episode, George was like, huh, it's really funny that Josie and I never talked.
Yeah.
Well, anyway.
I know they're moving up swiftly on. I'm just here to speculate on a diner franchise.
Yes. Now, just to mention them as well, because they are vitally important in what we kick off with, Valerie and Melody pretty much disappeared halfway through season two. They clashed with Josie. Josie decided she wanted to go her own way as a solo artist. And then I think they've been referred to once, maybe twice since then on both Riverdale and Katie Keene. They literally were just taken off the show. We'll get into more of them in a moment, but they were definitely people that were Josie's backup, and that was pretty much it, even though it was Melody. No, Valerie, sorry. Valerie dated Archie, right?
Yeah, Val. Yep.
Yeah, Val dated Archie. And even that was a very cute relationship, but we didn't get a whole lot from her back when that happened.
No.
The other thing that you probably need to know is that Tabitha has taken over Pops. She mentioned very early in the season, her introduction, that she was interested in franchising Pops and making it a national chain. Veronica owns Pops. She has run into some financial difficulties thanks to her estranged husband, not quite ex-husband, Chad.
Future ex.
Future X, exactly. So she is trying to make up that money somehow. And there's a bunch of other things they touch on this episode, but that's the main thing, is because it's all about the Pussycats. It's all about Tabitha. Oh, the other one is that Tony, very pregnant. Fangs, technically the father, I guess, is confirmed this episode. Not
yeah.
Kevin, even though it wasn't clear. My voice very high.
I know. Why are you so nervous about that?
I don't know. I don't want to get the genetics wrong. Anyway, she's very pregnant. She and Cheryl, at last we saw them, were very much estranged. They had a big fight. But since then, Cheryl has found a bit of peace through her musical theater ministry and the Indeed. Loving arms of Minerva Marble, who went away to South Africa forever in the last episode.
It's crazy we don't touch on that very simple plot twist in this episode.
I think it's okay. I mean, this is jumping very much to the end, but they're... If you want to order the storylines, you got Josie and the Pussycats first, right?
Yep.
And then Tabitha and Veronica are very much the B plot. Tony, I assume, because of when she came in and when they were shooting things and how they were putting everything together, very much a C plot, to the point that she has one scene where it's like, well, goodbye forever. That was your title of the episode. But she does have the C plot about the pregnancy. And even in this small plot, what I think they do very nicely and very subtly is Cheryl is the support system for Tony in this versus vice versa. So it's that subtle shift of Cheryl being there for Tony and wanting to win Tony back and want to be with Tony versus what has traditionally happened in the past, which is Cheryl's storyline and Tony just orbiting around it.
Just happens to be there. While we're talking about this, it's funny. I'm sorry, I'm so uncomfortable. I bought these very small pants. Ever since I watched this episode, I've been buying a series of small pants
Tiny
that
pants.
I keep getting into.
I like to keep my Smart Food Cinnamon Toast Crunch and Lay's chips in my tiny pants. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I 100%. But it's I'm thinking of joining the Navy, but not the new Navy.
Oh,
like something
like an ancient one.
Yeah, something that has a little experience. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. You, my friend, have been target advertised.
What?
I know.
What do you mean? What do you mean?
I know.
Not this. They didn't do the jeans, the tiny baby jeans.
I would love to sit in on a marketing meeting for this season specifically of Riverdale, because there have been ridiculous things in the past where they're like, oh, you should use Bumble for this date.
Yeah.
You know? But every episode this season has been somebody very blatantly eating something from, I think it's PepsiCo owns Lay's and probably Cinnamon Toast Crunch, I assume, as well.
Yeah.
I don't know if Pepsi also owns Old Navy, but maybe.
think about it. Maybe we just got, that's the real spoiler for the season, is that Pepsi, in the real world, Pepsi's about to buy Old Navy.
Oh, man. They're going to float on a sea of soda. Let's generally talk about this episode before we walk through the plot points. What'd you think, Justin? Was this worth the wait and the anticipation?
It was a fun episode. I liked that I said this, but it's like a whole new show. And honestly, it made me think, is this a whole new show? Is this a spinoff? The way that the plot comes together by the end, I'm like, this is clearly setting up something. Whether or not it goes that way, I obviously don't know. There hasn't been any announcement that I've seen. But it maybe not a series, a full series, but it could be a movie. It could be some kind of standalone thing.
So I will mention, I interviewed Ashley Murray and I asked her about this, and she didn't specifically address, like, no, there is going to be no spinoff. She also gave, I mean, granted, this could be like a very typical line for an actor, but when I asked her if she would be up for a spinoff if fans demanded it, she was like, listen, honestly, I haven't even really thought about it. I've thought about this episode. I wanted to give Josie and the Pussycats and everybody their due, and that's it. And whatever comes next, comes next. So to your point, and this is very much the end of the episode, to the point that, like, we don't even get the Riverdale logo. We get a new Pussycats logo.
Yeah.
I don't know what the goal is there, because watching it, I felt like you. I was like, this is a backdoor pilot, right?
100%. But
according to her, no, this is just Riverdale being Riverdale and throwing a million things at the end. On the business side, I have to imagine, unless, mind you, there's like Deadline has published an announcement while everybody's listening to this podcast.
Yeah.
It's up, which is entirely possible. My guess is that they did this as like a proof of concept thing, you know? Mm. I think it was January, Mark Pedowitz, who's the head of the CW, very casually dropped in an interview that, yeah, Roberto has been thinking about the life of Riverdale and what's next. They've discussed spinoff ideas. And what other spinoff idea are you going to do than Josie and the Pussycats, right?
Yeah.
Which is, as much as we like Katie Keene, that's what they should have done initially.
Yeah, and especially, I think we talked about this a little bit back in our Katie Keene cast days. It was weird to have a spinoff and have Josie in it, but not focus on her. Like, it feels like, why did you get so close to doing it and not doing it? When Josie and the Pussycats, while they're not a crazy popular thing that people are demanding, there's a cult movie that's already been made and out there years ago. Like, they are a known commodity, sort of on par with Archie and the gang. So I could see it hitting, especially if like they really leaned into the music in the same way they did on Katie Keene, but it was just like much more tied into the plot as opposed to something that was just happening alongside.
Yeah. And everything that happens, we'll get to the end of the episode, but everybody is like, here is my character arc for the first season or first couple of episodes of the show, straight up. Here's our conflict. Here's our mystery.
The dude that rolled up at the end, it was like, oh, you guys going somewhere interesting? Well, how about a mystery to fold into the mess? It was like, what? Foul play? Murder on the road with the band? The boy, Alan Mayberry, who we don't really see much of, but is a character from the old Josie and the Pussycats cartoon. Yeah. He's like, I'm going and I'm in love with you, but maybe it's not going to work out, or some kind of line like that.
Yeah,
it's like,
my girlfriend's going to stay back, but we'll see what happens with that. And Sweet Pea's like, I'm coming too.
Yeah, Sweet Pea. And of course.
Crazy. Here's just to game this out a little bit, and then I'm sure we'll talk more about it at the end of the podcast. But to game it out, if there isn't specifically an announcement right now of surprise, Josie the Pussycat spinoff, the only thing that I can imagine is happening is this is to get fans hyped. They're not giving like a backdoor pilot order so that they're creating the expectation of a show. But WB has to sign off on that. CW has to sign off on that. Archie Comics, everybody has to sign off of what happened in this episode, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So potentially it's the sort of thing where it's like, yeah, let's do it and kind of see what happens, you know, rather than you go to a Variety and you're like, here's the backdoor pilot. So it raises the expectations and the pressure on that episode. Instead, yeah, it just has to deliver as an episode of Riverdale. And then once people see that and they go, oh man, I gotta know more, I gotta watch more, tweeting hashtag Josie the Pussycats, that gets taken back. And then the CW, which has been picking up a bunch of shows, then can bring that more fully into consideration. Again, this is my very outsider guess on this thing, but
yeah,
that's my thought.
We're outsiders. We're just here watching the world go by.
You're literally outside. You're sitting in the woods right now.
I'm in the woods, so I'm a fully outside. I'm a capital O outsider.
So let's kick it off and talk through this episode. So many big things happen here. We kick off not with a Jughead narration, but Melody.
Out of here, Jones. You're done. You're fired, kid.
Jughead, by the way, maybe the most slammed in this episode. Like, of all the people slammed.
He gets full out heckled later. And his job is to play. She's a writer also. In your face, Jughead. She's successful. She's optioned her book for a movie. Like, this
with
is
Tyler Perry that she Tyler turns Perry. Down.
Turns down at the end. Thanks for looking up for the Pussycats and looking down for one Jughead Jones.
Now, this is, I'll tell you what, I think Melody, probably a better writer. Just going to throw that out there.
All signs literally point to her being a better writer. Both in the way she speaks words, which is writing, and also the fact that she is successful.
Yeah, and also the actress who plays Melody, Asher Bromfield, and this is a fun little Easter egg, recently published a YA novel called Hurricane Summer. And in this, she is a YA author who published a book called Summer Storm. So, cute little Easter egg there.
That's the thing with Riverdale, you know. There's so much going on all the time, but everything has a purposeful little move. These guys are playing chess, and I don't even know.
They're playing 2D checkers at the very least.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm sitting here putting checkers in my mouth, not knowing what's happening.
Yeah, chocolate checkers. Yum, yum.
Chocolate checkers.
So Valerie is making a toast to Melody. She left law school to publish her first novel. Melody says she found her voice through the book. As you mentioned, Tyler Perry is making a movie, and Valerie is playing the lead, and this becomes the initial conflict of the episode. And I really like this here, because I felt like the conflict could have been between Melody and Valerie and Josie, and that would have been enough. But giving them each their own individual lives, backstories, interests, something that happens between them as well as between them and Josie, I thought was really good and very well done.
Yeah, I agree. The Pussycats, I mean, this is the most we got to know Val and Melody in the entire series, really. And to actually see them take the time to build them out as characters and give them actual story and motivation here, I thought was a smart move. Both for just this episode and if this does go on to be something else.
And also, another big move that they have is Melody has a girlfriend, which raises, I can't do the percentage in my head, but what is it, 200%, 150% in terms of number of LGBTQ plus characters on the show?
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool and fun, and I'm sure people are freaking out about that. We also, as you mentioned, Alan M. and Valerie have a little bit, he's very supportive, but maybe there's a little bit of a rocky thing going on there because she doesn't necessarily want to be his fiance yet. And then
very similar to Katie Keene. Mm-hmm. Very similar.
And then we go over to Riverdale. You're in Pops. A song, Kiss My Hand, is playing from Josie, who's now an international superstar. And we find out she disappeared from the middle of her tour in Berlin. We don't know exactly why. We find out later. But then I believe it's Josie's music plays when she walks in. And I loved another big move, not big move, little move here, but Tabitha being a fan of Josie.
Yes.
Very fun.
I mean, we find out about a lot of fans of Josie. And one later on, it's good. I wish I could have been sitting next to you when you were watching this.
Oh, my God.
When Dr. Curdle Jr. is outs himself as a huge Josie fan. Whoo! I just wrote the word Alex in all caps in my notes because I was like, that had to light you up.
I love so many things about that just quick shot of Dr. Curl Jr., not least of which was him in regular clothes.
Yes. Very strange, but talking normally, holding a dead body or some sort of dead body cutting knife. You happy?
I'm a big fan. It's great. So funny.
Even more monsters love music, love pop music.
There you go. And it's also funny to have those two characters be fans because, of course, everybody likes Josie, but they know Josie. Tabitha never met her, you know? So even if she knows that Josie McCoy came from Riverdale, she doesn't know her. She's never met her. So, of course, she's going to be a fan. So nice little idea there. Josie says she wants to take a break, and she asks her, what's it like being back into Riverdale? And we get the first big, real big musical number, which is It's All Coming Back to Me Now by Celine Dion. And I will tell you straight up, Justin, I cried.
No.
Yes,
what?
I did. Well, maybe not like straight like bawling cry, but I definitely started tearing up at this.
because of the song or because of the Josie? Because I thought this was a really well done number.
Because of the Josie of it all. Like, not because I'm a huge Celine Dion fan.
But yeah, obviously you are, so that's fine.
I'm
huge. We can talk about that.
Yes.
You're the Dr. Curdle Jr. for Celine Dion.
The only part of Titanic I watch is the end credits.
Yeah. Best part?
So good. No, the song is great, and she crushes it with the song, but it was the idea of hearing Josie singing again, wandering through all of these sets, and then flashing back through her entire history. It just suddenly crashed down on me, the weight of not just Josie's history over the course of the show, but also, oh, we're doing this. This is this episode. This is the Josie and the Pussycats episode. We're actually going back and showing this and bringing on things together. And I mention this all the time on our podcast, but this episode was written by Roberto Aguirre-Sacasa and directed by Robin Givens. And what I feel like Roberto does almost better than anything else on the show is summing everything up in such a economical, beautiful way. And that's on display here. You get everything you need in this montage in an absolutely perfect way.
It makes a lot of sense to me that you're like, as the man who does the recaps on our podcast every week, that you're like, I just started crying when I realized how economically he summed up the backstory of Josie and the Pussycats. Makes sense. You're like emotionally connected to just concise writing. Brevity's the soul of wit.
Every time the Riverdale logo comes up, I start crying because I'm like, wow, that was such a nice short intro.
Yeah, exactly. How did they keep it so tight?
So great number, though. Really good.
Really impressed. And to your point that you're saying, like, the amount of information we get out of this is great, but it's also really well done. Like, if this were, I don't know, this is not the more speculation, but treating this episode like the pilot for a TV show, it's an amazing way to recap what Josie's been through, put her in this place, and have her also be performing this very theatrical number that was just great to watch and listen to.
And then bringing in Melody and Valerie on the verse where it's kind of shooting back about that and about being forgotten. Again, a very really good, strong way through song of making that happen. I thought it was very cool.
Yeah.
Then we get a very funny scene where it turns out she's singing, I guess, in her hotel room. And Hiram comes in and she to complain about the noise. And her line is, "Damn, Mr. Lodge, nice to know you're still a little bitch."
And this, I was like, whoa, Coda. I mean, not that I'm like feeling bad for Hiram, but I was like, yes, okay, get it. This is going to really play into the rest of the episode. And then like, nope, just dragging Hiram for no reason.
Did they even interact at any point? Like, I honestly don't remember.
Yeah, I was like, how do these people, how many confrontations they have? That'd be like, you hear about your like rich neighbor and you finally meet him. You're like, oh, I guess my little bitch neighbor's over here. It's like, whoa, what are you, we don't even know each other.
I also love the idea of getting Mark Consuelos, who's not like a small dude. He's jacked and large, but next to the tallest bellhop possible. So he looks tidy and petty there. Very funny.
Yeah, no, it was good. It was wild.
So then we go over to the B plot here with Veronica at Pops, Tabitha.
One last quick call out she's checked into the hotel as Miss Newmar, a reference to Julie Newmar, the original Catwoman.
There you go. Very secretive. Nobody would have caught on.
No one put that together.
So
you rarely hear celebrities registering for hotels under other celebrity names. It doesn't usually work super well.
Tom Cruise always does Will Ferrell. He always registers as Will Ferrell or whatever he is.
I can't tell those guys apart. Same skill set, same look.
Which one is in the Mission Impossible series? It's Ferrell, right?
I think it's Ferrell. In Mission Impossible, that's the like fun one where he like tells the news to people and he messes it up.
No, no, no. You're thinking of the one where he's a big elf. That's Mission Impossible.
Oh, that's what it is. Because imagine working for Santa Claus would be a Mission Impossible.
Very hard. All of those presents in one night? How does he do it?
Exactly.
Anyway, Veronica is at Pops. Tabitha was inspired by Josie, but doesn't mention her, which is very funny and weird. But it explains that she wants to franchise Pops. Veronica explains she can't do anything because of Chad, but they start to figure out a germ of an idea here, or at least start to think around it. Then we go to another fun reunion. And I love how Josie just got paraded around to everybody and got this individual time. Here we get with Kevin. In case anybody forgot, they are stepbrother and stepsister. So that's going on.
Let's not forget that.
Yep, the show certainly does a lot of times, but brings her over to Mr. Weatherby, who doesn't mention anything about his missing fingers, but is very happy to see her. And Josie wants to use the music room. She says she's come back because she wants to write a song inspired by her hometown. And the deal is she needs to teach a music class. And so she agrees to that, which is a very nice way of getting her in the school.
Weatherby is so psyched.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
The only good student he's ever worked with. He hates the rest of them.
Yeah, just Weatherby, like they build have built spent so much time building him up as this like very stern, and then he's like, Josie, like so happy to see her. It was just such a fun turnabout.
So then Smithers calls Veronica. Zandra Cabot is there. She shows up. She made investments with Chad and she wants her back. Now, this is another thing that we should mention here that's weird about this. And the show gets over it very quickly. But in terms of Katie Keene characters, we've already established both on Katie Keene and on Riverdale that Veronica is really good friends with Katie Keene.
Yes.
The character who also hates Zandra. So it's weird that Zandra and Veronica know each other and seem to be like maybe friends or acquaintances, and that nothing comes up there again. I'm sure it's expediency, but it was still weird.
Yeah. The whole thing, the mechanic of that was a little weird. I mean, I think I'm fine once I got past the idea that, oh, it's weird that both of them are in this episode. I like Zandra as a character. Like, she's
totally
so careless and reckless and mean while also being like, I don't give a shit about this. So I think she's a fun energy here.
Yeah, I was happy to have her there. I think it helps, again, just bringing forward some of the women of color in the Archieverse. And I think it probably also helped that she was probably in Vancouver because she's on the All-American spinoff. So she probably already quarantined the appropriate amount of time.
Look
so
at you.
To bring her in that way, too.
Look at you.
But whatever it is, Veronica tries to sell her on franchising Pops. She's not 100% sold on it. Then we go over to a great moment. Mm. Archie hears some singing down the hallway, knows instantly it's Josie, and she's with the music class. She says, Archie Andrews, and they hug. And all of those Archosy feelings came right back to me. I don't know about you.
Yes, I had spent so much time really shipping Archosy.
I like them. I thought they were a great ship. They brought out the best in each other, and seeing Archie smile and happy to see Josie there, seeing Josie happy to see him, it was great. It was a nice reminder.
It was nice. But just like the relationship with Val, it was one of those things where it was like, oh, this is destined to not be a final relationship. So with those, it's always like, oh, I can just see the ticker over their heads just being like counting down slowly to when this relationship sort of runs its course.
Totally. And I think that was right before she was leaving for Katie Keene.
100%. So we all knew what was happening here. But I do say they are sweet with each other. And I thought it was a nice moment.
I agree. And Archie invites her over to the White Worm. Josie calls Melody and Valerie very quickly. Is this the scene, I didn't note it down, where they freak out about her calling, I think?
Yes, they're like, one of them sees her and misses the call, and the other picks it up. It's just fun phone tag there.
Fun phone tag. Then we go over to the White Worm where the whole gag is here. Very funny cut in line from Archie where he says, we even made the sexy fighters calendar for the station. But anyway, enough about me.
Yeah,
which I love the idea that he went off for probably, 5 hours talking about everything that's happened in Riverdale in the intervening time.
This whole scene was so funny, like just the idea of them recapping. I wanted Josie's like, all this stuff was crazy. And Betty should have said like, well, that was so many seasons ago. So you don't have to worry about it. Weeks, years, like we just, it's just a wash of how crazy this show is. We could get away with them actually referencing that they're in a new season now.
Yeah. And Josie then lays everything out for everybody in a really, really sharp way that is totally worthwhile, but very hard to watch when they talk about old times. And she shuts everyone down, explains, no, they're not friends. To Betty, she says, we have spoken all of one time. And when Cheryl, initially in the show, if you remember all the way back, Cheryl and Josie were best friends and then never really talked again. And I had completely forgotten about that. She calls out that Cheryl sent her a pig's heart at one point.
Right.
And Cheryl's like, oh, right. Yeah, I guess I did do that.
Yeah.
And not to bring up this interview again, but talking to Ashley Barry about it, apparently that was really hard to film this scene because it was getting to the heart of a lot of the things that they talked about, the sort of hard feelings about with her character. And she likes everybody in the cast and likes everybody on the set and grew up with them, et cetera, et cetera. But laying it all out like that apparently was a very rough scene to do.
Oh, wow. That's that's tough. That's cool. Yeah.
So then Josie exits, sees Sweet Pea on his sweet hog.
It is on. It is on. Once you see that sweet pea, you cannot resist that sweet pea.
Mm-hmm. What did you think about this? Because this is another thing, a relationship that like they kissed by the pool in the season 3 premiere. And then there was that scene where Josie came to Sweet Pea's tent and was like, I can't do this anymore. And I think that was it. So did this give you the closure you wanted?
Yes, finally. I was like, oh, of course. If someone was like, who is Josie's best relationship in the cast? I would, of course, have said Sweet Pea. And I would have also said they belong together. Sweet Pea should go on the road and solve her father's murder with her.
Yep, definitely. But still, I liked it because Jordan Cotter is very nice. Yeah. And they honestly had, I think, more chemistry and got more to do in this than any other scene that we've seen previously with them together. So that was nice.
Yeah, they fully got it on. We get her sneaking out of the hotel room the next day. It felt very real, like a real relationship.
And this is what she needed. She needed a Sweet Pea bang to get back on her old music horse and figure out her problems, you know?
Yep, that's how I get inspired, is I have sex with the Sweet Pea in my life.
Valerie and Melody meet Josie at the White Worm. They catch up. She explains that she wants to write about Riverdale. Do they perform anymore? And they're like, do we perform?
This is wild. Also, I love this. Everything's a little edgy. You got your all the cat metaphors you want to say. Claws out, tails up, arched backs. Everyone's getting ready to fight. And it ends in a dance-off.
And then they go back, talk to Josie about her disappearing. She explains about her ditching them. And they shoot back at her that that's the same thing her dad did to her. So they were always very surprised and hurt by it. So it's a tense scene, though, as we know, it's going to work out later. Veronica introduces Tabitha and Zandra, sells her on pop. Zandra loves it, but wants some tweaks.
Tweaks. You can't tweak pops.
And she says she's always liked a singing diner, which is a weird thing for Zandra. I feel like Zandra does not like a singing diner, to be honest.
I 100% agree. Now, who likes a singing diner?
I don't like a singing diner. No, if I'm just at any restaurant, just leave me alone.
It's like if you went to see a Broadway show and they were like, hey, do you want a hamburger and some fries and a milkshake? It'd be like, I'm sort of busy watching this musical right now. It's the opposite of a diner where everyone's like, so here's the ketchup. I'm like, hey. Let's just relax. I just want to have this little cheap meal with my friends.
It's 3 a.m. I'm very tired. Please stop.
Yeah, I've driven for 8 hours. I have 8 more hours to go. I'm running from the law. Get your number. Get your song out of here. I don't need to hear.
Welcome and bienvenue. Anyway, at this point, this is all just a tee up. This is completely just there so that Tony, Tabitha, and Zandra could do a number with each other. And I'll tell you what. When this started, I lost my mind.
Oh, do tell. I was very surprised to see Tony just like
just show up out of nowhere, still very pregnant.
I was like, wait, what? Is this on purpose? Or did she wander through the set and just start dancing?
Yeah, I don't know. So Little Shop of Horrors is my favorite musical of all time.
Oh, my God.
I have seen so many productions of Little Shop of Horrors. I directed Little Shop of Horrors in college. I've watched the movie innumerable times, listened to the soundtrack. I previously have been like, Little Shop of Horrors would be a good, fun fit for Riverdale, but never thought they'd do it. And when they hit those first chords, when they went, dun, da-dun, I was like, no, what? No, are they doing it? Are they doing it?
Tingles
all over my body. I had a great time, Justin. I was so happy.
It's funny you say that. My wife is an actor, and she's auditioning for a Little Shop of Horror production, like literally this weekend. She was sending her tape in, and So I was going, reading through the sides. I was like, I can't believe this is a real musical. It's so weird.
It's very weird.
It's crazy. And this is like a much loved by present company here musical. It's such a funny thing to me.
I love it. It's just not to get too into Little Shop of Horrors, but it's dark. It's funny. The musical numbers are great. What was she trying out for? Audrey, I assume?
Yes.
Yeah. All right. That tracks. Anyway, they do Little Shop of Horrors for no other reason other than to have them do Little Shop of Horrors, but it's fantastic. They have bloody, gross shakes. I loved Veronica in the background being like, yay! Yeah.
And Kevin in the corner booth just being like, this is fun. I love it here.
So fun. And then Tony does a quick Old Navy ad. Very weird. Yeah. This was the point, I know I mentioned this earlier, but this is the point where I was like, is that it? Is that all she's doing in the episode? What is
she's
going
just
on?
Popping in for a little commercial, getting that. I feel like she owed money to the Old Navy mob or something. She became addicted to performance fleeces, and to pay back, she had to do this ad in the middle of the episode.
Do you think there was somebody else they had to have it there? Because there's that quick line, I think it's from Zandra or Tabitha, I honestly don't remember, who's like, oh, Tony, thanks for learning the choreography so quick.
Yeah.
Where that felt like Vanessa Morgan, thank you for jumping into this number or something.
And but I love the way that the rest of her storyline unfolds. It's just for this to be the beginning of it, I was like, oh, okay. Felt a little weird.
We haven't seen you in months
a
at
long
this
time.
Point.
Yeah.
So Zandra says, this is great. Let's do it. I just want to see your finances for the last 20 years. And Veronica and Tabitha are like, yikes. And then we go back to Josie's storyline. Sierra McCoy, also the director of the episode, is there. But she figured out that she was Julie Newmar, looked through all the clues. And then we find out what really happened, which was Josie was about to go on stage in Berlin and got a call from Sierra that her dad had suddenly died. And she had to go on stage and said she walked away and came to Riverdale. Gut-wrenching scene.
It was like,
oh my god,
really went for it. First off you get this huge urn drop at the top of the scene, which I was like, oh, this is intense already. And then the way they talk about it is like they get after it.
And she says, I thought I could disappear here just like in high school, which is like a knife twisting line, I thought.
Yeah,
but so nicely done. And we get the note that her dad wanted his ashes scattered all over the country. There's a bunch of old songs of his that are left for Josie. I was kind of surprised at the end that they didn't sing one of those old songs from the dad.
Me too. But I also think this is such a great runner for a future series or a series of episodes about Josie, where like each episode we get a new song from her dad's songbook or whatever. And we're sort of building that out over the course of it. Very fun.
Or they're musical clues to the mystery and they unlock tombs and things, you know?
Yeah.
Plays a song.
I've got the being murdered by this other guy in a hat. Blues.
Oh, you think Toots Sweet did it?
No, I don't know.
Well, your father died not of natural causes. It was me.
Yeah.
See you later.
Save it for the series.
Yeah. So Melody wants to do right by Valerie. We go back to them, tells her it won't be a movie. Tyler probably wants a star. Melody told him no, unless it stars Valerie. So we get a little wrap up of that. They're together no matter what, which is nice and ties into the whole Josie of it all in terms of ditching them. Then we go to Zandra, who digs for the books, and we get another really surprisingly deep revelation about the history of Riverdale here, where she says, why don't we use dehydrated milk? And Tabitha refuses, says, no, I'm not going to change the recipe because originally all Pops did was sell milkshakes and it was a safe place for black people to be in town back in the 40s and 50s. So I love that note. Like love just adding that, and it gave it surprising depth to the storyline.
And I think what Riverdale does is they find their depth quickly. Like when she was like, I want to use dehydrated milk or instant milk or whatever she said, I was like, that's a crazy idea. And then they just, that would be very gross. Can you imagine? Yeah. Like what milkshake place would ever use that?
I don't know. Ice cream's not that expensive.
No, neither. I mean, milk is a little expensive, but
sure.
You don't need that much. Anyway, to go from something like that I was like, oh, that's weird. And then it's like, just cuts right into this very real, very like interesting, like bit or historical fact about Pops. I thought was really, really great. Really well done.
Yeah. Really good stuff there. Then because of that, Xandra wants to pull out her money. She has to wait until tomorrow because the banks are closed. Will it work out? I guess we'll have to stay tuned and find out. Then we go over to Juicy in the music room. Valerie and Melody come to talk to her about her dad. Josie talks about wanting to play with her dad one more time and the Pussycats one more time. She says she wants to do a concert. And so they talk to Archie, and Archie's like, yes, the thing that will save Riverdale is a very small, intimate concert in a bar where everybody spends every night anyway.
It's crazy enough to work.
Yep. I mean, very, very Archie comics of it all. Like, yes, of course it will work. Of course, it shouldn't work. There's no reason it should work, but sure, that's fine. How much do they charge for tickets, do you think?
$7,000. So it was expensive to get in. That's why it was so intimate. They only needed to sell 8 tickets to save the town.
Yeah.
So it worked out perfectly.
Dr. Kirtle was like, I'll take all 8.
Yeah. This is how I talk. I'm not trying to be creepy. I'm a fan.
So, the line is, if that doesn't save Riverdale, nothing will. And then we finally go over to the concert. It's a big concert. We finally get the Josie and the Pussycats theme song, I think for the first time in the history of the show.
I think so too. And it was great. The whole commitment to the Josie and the Pussycats original sort of vibe, I thought was a really fun thing to do here.
And great. I loved this whole sequence of just everybody loving the concert and having a good time. We get to see that so rarely on the show, not just everybody happy, but everybody together and happy. The last time I can think of was in the Hedwig episode when Kevin was giving the concert in the music room and everybody was loving it. The same sort of thing. It's just, it's enjoyable watching everybody together like that because there's so much murder and weirdness all the time.
Yeah.
So we
get the total burn on Jughead here. Josie's just listing venues that she's performing in and she just digs. Even Jughead Jones. Oof.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, he toasts a milkshake. Now, not to get too into ships here, but I will just mention, because it just touches on it a little bit, he's sitting pretty close to Tabitha, but also next to Betty, right? Is there anything we should read from that, or is that just where people are sitting?
I think the real indicator here is someone's like, where should we put Jughead? How about right there in the frame, in the shot, right there? And then they were like, perfect. We have to keep shooting this show right now.
Yeah, come on. We don't have a lot of time. This is a musical episode. This is the last thing we're shooting for the season. We got to wrap this up.
But let me say, Alex, if you want to measure, if you want to get a freeze frame and measure in millimeters the distance between the two, I think that may also indicate where we're headed.
That'd be great. In all seriousness, though, I did really appreciate that all ships were put to the side so that the focus could be on Josie the Pussycats, Tabitha, Veronica, Tony in a certain aspect as well. And like I said earlier, Cheryl mostly just being there in a support role for Tony's storyline, I thought was great.
Yeah, sort of everything was put on hold across the whole season and we were able to just be with the characters. And let me say, I like that for this episode. I also like that as like taking a little breather from all the wild shit that we're dealing with in the rest of the series right now. It was really nice to have a little break on that and just see everybody hanging out in a nice, mostly nice way.
Totally. And then we get another very heartbreaking number as Josie does Nina Simone's Stars for her father. I thought the thing that really got me was the shot of Robin Givens in the crowd when they cut to her. That was so sad because she was barely holding it together.
It's good. Good song. Good emotional choices here.
She briefly sees a vision of her dad, and then the song causes Tony to go into labor. Another great
as
doctor.
As songs do.
Another amazing moment as they say, is there a doctor here? And they cut to Dr. Kirtle and he says, I'm a doctor.
I was like, and then they don't go with him. They go with Figs and Cheryl.
Figs like, I don't know. I'm on the Serpents, so.
Yeah, so I've seen some shit and I believe that. But the fact that Dr. Kirtle, I mean, who knows? Doctor might be his first name for all we know.
Yes.
Might not be a title. So it's like he just is named that. Yeah. But I thought that was, again, such another funny moment that they just keep it fun.
Yeah. And we do, not to keep harping on this, but on the slow trade back to Shodi, Cheryl does not even hesitate for a second when they ask for help. She immediately jumps up and says, I'll help. So I think another just nice little note there that what we're getting with this ship is Cheryl has turned a corner and now she is going to be there to try to win Tony back and support Tony as much as possible. Though it'll be an interesting wrinkle now that it seems like Fangs and Tony are getting closer because of the baby. So
yeah,
we'll have to see what happens there.
Indeed.
Then Xandra, of course, decides to invest in Pops because Josie, a superstar, is attached. She thinks that's great. And then we get all of these insane, wild setup for a spinoff series things that happen one after another in, I think, 5 minutes total, yeah, something like
very,
that.
Very, that was breathtaking what was happening.
Yes. Josie wants to go on tour with them as the Pussycats. Valerie talks about dating Alan, but she's in. Melody needs to talk to Nancy, her girlfriend, but decides it's also going to be a book tour at the same time.
Smart.
Not how that works, but all right. And then we find out it's a boy, and the boy's name is Anthony.
This is just intentionally confusing.
Yeah.
And I get that it's like a slightly different name, but it's like you can't have two people named Tony in the same very small family.
What's going to happen when Fang says, hey, Tony, could you come help with this? And the baby comes over instead of Tony Topaz.
Exactly. Tony, could you drive to the store and pick up milk? And the baby's all of a sudden behind the wheel of a car.
That's not going to work. That baby's going to get in trouble.
That baby's headed for trouble.
Yeah. Plus, that baby is not a real baby. So that's a problem, you know, all in of itself.
100%.
Yeah, that's a baby doll.
It's a baby doll. They have to deal with the fact that she gave birth to a doll. That's going to be something they should definitely talk about.
Yes.
And not out of the realm of possibility in Riverdale. Maybe we could ship that doll with the Jason murder doll.
Oh, yeah. I'd love to see them together. Yeah. That'd be great.
Tony and murder doll. Turter.
So Josie has somehow made a Pussycats bus appear in, I think, less than a day. Which,
you know,
you're
wrapping those buses is actually a very easy process.
Oh, okay, great.
You just have to pay for the plastic.
And then we get this is a very old reference, but it's very much like, do you remember when the critic came to The Simpsons, that episode?
Yes.
And
at the
end of the episode, he's like, hey, maybe you guys can come visit my show sometime. And Bart says, I don't think we're going to do that.
Yeah. Very
that was
funny.
Straight up exactly what happens here, except obviously the opposite, but he's like, hey, you guys should come out and see me on tour sometime. And they're like, we will 100%. Can we get backstage passes? Yeah. I'd love to be there and make a guest appearance on your Pussycat spinoff show. Crazy. Alan says he's in it for the long haul. Melody is not bringing Nance with her. Sweet Pea comes, as we mentioned earlier. He wants to come out on the road, hops on the bus, and then we get Toot Sweet shows up and lays out all the information. He was a musician that toured with Josie's dad. Her father didn't die of natural causes. He was murdered. Maybe there's voodoo involved in New Orleans.
I mean, again, in a sundae covered with every piece of candy you could ever think of. When he threw out and he was into voodoo, I was like, come on, dude. You did not need to say that right now. Wild.
Where did you come from? Also, like, where were you the rest of the episode, Toot Sweet?
Your timing is impeccable. Also, we're just about to get on this bus and head back down to where you just were.
Another insane tossed off thing was Sierra getting on the bus, I think, because she's got other things to do, I have to imagine, including her husband still is in Riverdale, as far as we know.
Yeah.
But nope, she's there too. And then we see the Pussycats on the bus drinking champagne. They talk about Magical Musical Mysteries Unknown, which I believe is from the Josie and the Pussycats animated show, if I remember correctly.
Right. Yes, I think you're right.
And then we get the Pussycats logo at the end, and that's it for the episode. Great. Super fun. I love this episode.
I agree. Very fun episode. Again, a nice breath of fresh air in relation to all of the sort of trauma-based, heavier things we're dealing with right now in the rest of the show. Just a fun romp with a lot of just the right amount of ridiculous things happening.
And we touched on this earlier, but I hope there is a spinoff. It almost feels like a no-brainer with everything that they've set up. Having it be serialized with the dad's murder so that they can figure it out. They can go on these weird Scooby-Doo-esque mysteries potentially and solve them, do musical stuff. You got the relationship stuff going on as well. I don't know if it'll work out schedule-wise because it really, really feels like Ashley Murray kind of wants to move on at this point, is my suspicion.
Right.
So there might be that. And also probably not go through, not that I know her very well or anything, but probably not go through the process of like doing another show on the CW that maybe gets canceled after one season that's another spinoff of Riverdale. I could see not wanting to do that. Certainly, Asher Brumfield and Hallie Law have a lot of things going on in their careers as well. So maybe it won't work out, but, you know, maybe they could do like a mini series or something, you know, do like a 6-episode or 10-episode thing. I think that would be fun.
That's what I'm saying. Like, all options are sort of on the table. So, like, why not?
Totally. It would be great. Before we wrap up here, who is the MVP of the episode, Justin?
Great. Thanks for going to me first. I got to give it up to, I mean, it's got to be Josie. This episode was just Josie. If nothing else, for her call out of Hiram being a little bitch, this was a Josie episode all day or day.
Yeah, I'll, just to be a little different, I'll give it to Josie and the Pussycats, which I know is a little bit of a cheat, just because I felt like they did such a good job of making sure, yes, it was a Josie-centric episode, Josie got her due, but the Pussycats did as well, and I thought that was great.
Agreed.
If you'd like to support our podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about Riverdale, iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Riverdale Dark on Twitter, at Riverdale After on Instagram, Riverdale After Dark on Facebook. Until next time, we'll see you after dark.
After Josie's Pussycat tour.
Nailed it. Oh,